Welcome back to the Bracket Racket. Galen Clavio here. Joining you once again this week of college basketball has come and gone. A lot of fun games, a lot of interesting outcomes, and a lot of things to look forward to for the upcoming week. We're going to talk about all those things and more here on the show for the next hour or so. I'm joined by two of our regulars. First of all, Lee Delvecchio back on the program. Lee, welcome.
Hi, Galen.
Yeah, Lee's not in the greatest of moods right now. I'm sorry, man.
It's okay. There's going to be two or one chance for UConn to get a marquee win the rest of the year. I'm going to go drink bleach.
Also joining us, David Griggs. David, how are you doing? Everybody's in a sour mood. I'm in a chipper mood because my team's terrible loss happened like 6 days ago. So I've had plenty of time to get over it at this point. But
Well, it's not just. I mean, it's the culmination of many terrible losses.
That's true.
That make the mood. I still can't see. Well, what I don't know what the problem is.
There's no greater loss than the loss of vision. That's for That's for sure.
Let's see what's wrong.
Speaking of losing, I don't know, Galen. Do you want to? I mean, do you even want to discuss what happened to your team Monday night?
We can. I mean, it's really simple.
There was a score from today that made me think of it.
Oh, yeah?
Eastern Washington, I don't know if you saw, they won at home against Eastern Oregon. But here's the takeaway. Eastern Oregon scored 87 points today against Eastern Washington.
Yeah.
Indiana scored 86 against Eastern Washington on Monday. Lost by two.
There's something to be said for that. Yeah, Eastern Washington beat Indiana 88-86. And, you know, it's funny to me. You bring up the offense, and what is more concerning to me is the defense that was played by Indiana in that game. They allowed an Eastern Washington team that's not that great to score basically the 1.2 points per possession clip in Assembly Hall and shoot 57% from two-point range.
Well, I mean, is it really surprising? Maybe not expected, but is it surprising that what's probably the best team in the Big Sky could go on the road and beat a team that will likely miss the NIT?
Well, okay, it is surprising.
That's the offense of the country, folks.
It is surprising from the standpoint that the folks around here certainly don't think that this IU team is going to miss the NIT.
I'm sure they can catch it on television. It is broadcast this year,
the Gazelle Group folks will help you print up the banner.
Is that one of those printed? Yeah. It's one of those print at home banners, right? You know what? I will say this. I watched that game from courtside, and I wasn't overly impressed with Eastern Washington. They got behind by quite a bit. You know, I guess what made it worse was they lost their like second or third leading scorer a minute into the game, into the second half, on the rare foul technical combo that fouled him out of the game at that particular point. And, you know, they had another guy that broke his nose and missed like 8 minutes of play. And it was a disastrous game. I'd say this Indiana team's interesting. They've got nice offensive pieces. They just cannot play defense right now. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a problem moving forward, without question.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. But, that is interesting.
They're actually much better offensively than I thought they'd be.
Yeah, so far. But, of course, they haven't really played a lot of good teams offensively. I'm curious to see what happens when they play teams with actual defenses.
Which would be exclusively limited to the conference schedule.
Yeah, at this stage.
But, I mean, at least you can score. That's, you know, UConn can't do that. So, there's that. All right, so that was Monday. But I don't know where you wanted to actually go with this.
Well,
last year, and I wasn't that impressed either, but obviously a huge win for them getting some, I mean, maybe they get some buzz around the program, but, you know, Colin Coward will be talking them up in March. We'll see.
Oh.
But where do you want, I know you can't wait for that. Where do you want to go from there, Galen? That was Monday. Tuesday, I'm trying to remember when the games at the Garden were, if they were.
Yeah, when I was doing my prep, I just decided we'd start on Wednesday. And if we missed
That's fair. I feel a little bad maybe about bringing up that game.
No, it's maybe. Fine. It's interesting.
I rather enjoyed watching that.
I think it's a bellwether from the standpoint of how the middle of the Big Ten might do this year. And actually, there's another game that maybe we'll start with that happened on Wednesday that also kind of made me scratch my head. St. John's 60, Minnesota 51. You know, the people had a lot of plans for this Minnesota team, and so far they've been kind of uneven, shall we say. They lost to Louisville in the first game of the year. That wasn't that big of a deal. But losing to St. John's, it was actually 70-61, my mistake. St. John's not a team that people were really looking at and saying, hey, this team's going to do well. But they outscore Minnesota 19-6 in the final 10 minutes of that game. And I don't know if this said more about the Golden Gophers not being where they need to be or St. John's being better than we thought. What's your thought? Let me start with you, Lee.
Well, yeah, I mean, I would love to take this opportunity to remind everyone that in the preseason, you and I both thought that Minnesota was a team we had a lot of concerns about.
Yes, we did.
In the Big Ten. But the truth is, St. John's is one of several Big East teams that have been really, really impressive in the early season.
You have no idea how hard this is for Lee Delvecchio to say, folks.
Yeah, well, it's been a tough day anyway, so I might as well just get all the awful shit out of the way. I mean, there was a huge four-point play for D'Angelo Harrison. It's worth mentioning. I mean, it was a home game for St. John's, which, while normally not a big deal, being that they, you know, it was a preseason tournament, good crowd, a lot of energy. It was a night game, so they actually had something in the building for basketball, an energy that the Knicks certainly will not be presenting to the tri-state area for several years. But no, I mean, that was the huge play in this game, was Harrison got the four-point play with 2:23 to go, and you know, that gave St. John's a six-point lead. So, I mean, the game was touch and go up until then, and then down the stretch, St. John's just did a very good job of hitting their free throws.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that down the stretch they did. Overall, they shot 60% from the line. But I thought this was really a game that was closer than the score indicates, but it's a huge win for St. John's. It's one they obviously needed. They got 51 rebounds. I mean, inside they destroyed Minnesota. And that's where I would be really concerned if I was Richard Pitino, that, you know, we knew they had big losses coming into the season. That's why you and I, Galen, had questions. But for them to not just get out hustled, you know, on the court, but to also get, you know, shoved around.
Yeah.
I mean, it's St. John's didn't do great at the line until late, and they did absolutely nothing from outside. So it really just came down to a fact where Minnesota was unable to utilize their size advantage against St. John's. And that's really distressing considering they play in the Big Ten.
Yeah, and you know,
still issues in conference play.
And it's interesting because this is a game we're going to be playing a lot on the podcast for the next month or so. The idea of what have you done in the non-conference to help secure an NCAA berth? Minnesota pretty much just played their last decent non-conference game. They did beat Georgia on a neutral floor. That's not really much of an accomplishment.
I mean, look, as the president and, I mean, sole member at this point of the Mark Fox fan club, yeah, no, that's...
No, I'm a member.
But, okay, well... I turned in my membership, guys. I'm sorry. But,
I'm taking a look at their remaining schedule, and we'll get into later. They have the Big Ten ACC Challenge, but that's Wake Forest.
They have Wake Forest, and it's a road game, so it's a double whammy of bad, because if they lose the game, that's really bad, and if they win the game, no one's going to care. And then they don't... The better team they play from that point until the start of the Big Ten season is Western Carolina, UNC Wilmington?
I mean, I'll say this because he probably has one. I don't know, David. What are your thoughts on this North Dakota team?
I mean, far from at large caliber.
Yeah.
Okay, I like North Dakota by WAC standards. I don't like them by this is an at large caliber team that's inside the bubble. Nice win at home against them standard.
And the reason why I mention North Dakota is because their 2-4 record is better than Southern, who's 1-6 in Minnesota plays at home, better than Seattle, who's 2-3. Well, I mean, pretty much even who Minnesota plays at home. And Seattle will probably still be on the 2 and not on the 3 by the time they play on the 19th. That game is on BTN opposite UConn Duke. So if you really hate yourself on December 19th, you've got other options. But the best game, like you said, Gail, is playing a 3-3 Western Carolina team. And I just don't see it with this Minnesota team. They're going to have a lot of trouble
They're gonna have to make a lot of hay in conference play, and they've not traditionally done that. But anyway, let me move over to David, and David, let me switch back to the Big East motif we were just on. Another Wednesday game, and one of far greater note, I think. Butler 74, North Carolina 66. We talked about this on the email list a little bit. This Butler team, I don't think anybody really knew what to expect, and obviously with the problems with the coaching staff in the off season, and you know, really nobody knowing what was going on there going into the year, you would have been surprised if Butler came out and did something like, you know, beat the fifth place team in the country on a neutral floor. But they did that, and in pretty impressive fashion down the stretch.
Butler, as a program, there's nothing else. There's nobody else like them. I mean, they went from, I guess, in about a 20-year span, from being a middle-of-the-pack team in a very weak Horizon League to where they are now. And it isn't just that they've improved consistently. They've improved consistently while always giving the status quo the impression that the party was over. Like when Barry Collier left after the, it was 2000 or something when they lost, they led Florida, I think, for
that
the entire
game. That was 2000.
Game. Yeah. Lost on a last-second tip-in. Florida is the national runner-up, and everybody was like, oh, what a shame. Butler actually had a chance to win a game in the tournament. Yeah. Party's over. I mean, they always seem to master the art of making you think they're done. And here they are. Once again, they're out. The party's over. They were lucky. The whole Brad Stevens thing. Six games into the season, they're 5-1. They have two wins away from home against likely tournament teams, and one of them was against the fifth-ranked team in the country. And despite all the chaos, they actually have a really good coach, Chris Holtmann. We talked about that when he left Gardner-Webb to go to Butler to be an assistant. It's like, what is this guy doing? He went from winning five games to winning 25 or whatever it was in just three seasons at Gardner-Webb. This guy's really good. Why would he go be an assistant? And yet here, I mean, even when everything goes as wrong as it can possibly go, Butler comes out the other end with a good coach and a 5-1 record with two really good wins. It's incredible.
It is.
How do they do that?
It's the Butler way.
Don't say that, please.
Well, I know. But no, I will say this. Trust me, I live in Indiana. The Butler way thing, that gets a lot of people irritated because it's that kind of self-sufficient branding thing, you know. But anyway, I do think, though, there is something to the way that they do business. They're very smart. They're very deliberate. Barry Collier is an excellent AD. He hires the right people. I mean, obviously, I think he didn't make a great hire with the Brandon Miller thing, although that was hard to foresee. But, you know, they got lucky with Holtmann coming in and being an assistant coach, and they recruit good players. You know, it's funny. You've got teams at Indiana and Purdue and Notre Dame in state who are struggling this year and have struggled at times here in the past with not getting the right sort of talent. And a lot of the guys that they have overlooked have gone to Butler and have been successful. And, you know, it's kind of what Xavier does too, to a certain degree. I mean, it's why Xavier's been as successful as they've been over time, is that they attract a certain caliber of player and then they have good coaches that can develop them. And
I have a theory on this.
Please.
Which will shock
you.
Yes,
please. Because
it comes out when you see basically a lot of the Big East schools, because you have a lot of smaller schools in inner cities. And I think for programs like Indiana, Notre Dame, and Purdue, the aperture is so wide, the focus is so wide that they're looking everywhere for kids because these are national brands. That allows them to that's why they might struggle. Whereas a program like Butler, they're going to keep it simple. They're in Indianapolis, so they look for kids, a lot of kids basically in Indianapolis high schools, and a lot of kids from, you know, and it's the same for, you know, the Georgetown program has been built on a lot of kids from the Maryland region and St. John's, obviously, with New York kids. And those are, by virtue of the size of those cities, there's so many kids and there's so much talent. You don't have to worry about going and becoming a nationwide program and big recruiting budgets. Just get the good local players.
Yeah.
They stay for 3 or 4 years. You know, they learn. And I think it gives them the ability, whereas these other schools, I don't think that any program actively goes out to try and get a recruit who will only be there for a year. Not even Kentucky, because it's counterintuitive. It's likely that those kids will all leave after you're at Kentucky. It's even expected. But when you can But when you're worried about just getting players into your program and you've got in your backyard really good high school basketball, you know, it makes it a lot easier when you know that the big boys, it's easy to sneak something past them while they're trying to get, you know, the number one recruit out of Chicago if they're Indiana.
Well, maybe, but Ohio State, Louisville, Michigan, Michigan State, those teams are also able to recruit Indianapolis and the surrounding areas in Indiana better than IU and Purdue and Notre Dame have been generally. You know,
they don't have time.
Remember,
the title team
was all the kids from Flint. That was right in state.
I get that. I'm just saying that within this particular example, I think partially what you're saying is correct, but I don't necessarily think it's because the aperture is too wide. I think Butler just does a superior job of evaluating talent and having a system that talent fits in. And, you know, you look at Purdue as an example. Look at what Purdue was doing 5 years ago versus what they're doing now. They have a completely different personnel set, and the coach hasn't changed, and what he's trying to do on the floor really hasn't changed that much. But yet they don't really have the personnel to match what they're doing. And I think you see a similar thing going on at IU, and Notre Dame's kind of a special case. But, you know, the idea being that Butler knows what they're going out and looking for, and because of the success that they've had, they continue to be able to bring those guys in. And, you know, look.
I think another part of this is you see the recruiting classes after signing day when they're summarized, and if you're like us three and you're junkies and you look at the recruiting class for, like, I'll pick a random mid-major, Weber State, the coach's evaluation mentions very specific skills
for
the players. And you know, and Weber State's been a good program. They were recruiting a specific kind of player. We need a key outside shooter who's good off the dribble. And then you go and you look at the recruiting class for like a place like UConn or a place like, you know, UCLA as well. He was top 10 in, you know, scouts rankings and all these awards and accolades, but nothing about the actual skills. You know they're a good player. You know they're talented. But a place like Butler where they have a system that's established, they know the kind of players they need to fit that system. They're not looking for some guy who's like a five-star recruit. They're looking for a guy who can handle pressure in the backcourt and break a press. Like, they're looking very specifically for players. They do even more important, they do a great job identifying them because that's, at the end, all that matters. You have to actually follow through on what you think you're getting. And, you know, now they've got this awkward situation, David, with...
Very awkward, yes.
Now, I think, everyone seems to assume that this guy's going to get the full-time job, but... I mean, there's an interesting legal twist there.
Yes. I don't know all the specifics. I'm sorry. I know that it's being heavily rumored that Brandon Miller is looking to return at the end of this year. I think whatever his health care expires because he's on administrative leave, and it would expire at the end of this year. And he is planning on returning at that point. That would be, in my opinion, incredibly disruptive. I don't know exactly what his medical condition is. I'm under the impression that it isn't anything life-threatening as long as it's treated. It's along the lines of abnormally high blood pressure. Not that specifically, possibly, but something along those lines that kind of needs to be treated, and maybe he shouldn't be in a very high-stress, high-energy position. But nothing against Brandon Miller, and I don't want to sound callous, but it would be incredibly disruptive to that program, in my opinion, if he were to return. I don't think he should have been the head coach last year. I think Chris Holtmann was clearly the better candidate, clearly the more qualified, clearly the more credentialed. He'd had 3 years experience as a head coach and had done very well, and he's done really well since he's been there. But at the same time, how do you even begin to handle that? I don't know.
is this Kevin O'Neill at Arizona part two?
I don't know if it's quite that, but it's definitely an awkward situation. And look, I think it's easy to get caught up in the details, and they may not matter in the long run because I think ultimately they'll figure things out. This is not like a normal job, and it's kind of like, you know, it's like being in any really high profile public sort of position, like a broadcaster or, a star of a television show. You can take a leave of absence, but the chances of you being able to come back and enter in the same job that you had before, at some point the ship sails. And I'm not saying that that's what should happen. I'm just saying that that's generally what happens. So I would be surprised, particularly if the season continues to go well for Butler, if we don't see a permanent change in their head coaching structure at the end of this year. You know, it's going to be interesting, though. It's something that, that definitely bears further observation.
Well, I mean, but the way we started out on this, we really should get back to what a great win it was for the Bulldogs.
Right.
At the Battle for Atlantis with a huge second half. And I was just so much more impressed by Butler's decision-making in the second half than North Carolina's. And their, you know, their toughness really showed. They definitely were hustling around a lot more than North Carolina was. They were hitting the deck. They were chasing loose balls. And, you know, I started to have those questions. Uh-oh, North Carolina, this could be an issue. You know, another highly touted Roy Williams team that starts off slow in the non-conference. But at the same time, they, you know, one Butler played exceptionally well. And then North Carolina responded very well in their next two games in the Bahamas.
Yeah. I mean, they beat two ranked teams down there, so they didn't have a bad tournament.
Right. I mean, they end up beating UCLA and Florida. So those are two great wins for North Carolina's resume. And especially for Butler's. I mean, this is a team, Butler, who I don't think any of us really thought was a tournament team before the season started. And now, I mean, it would be really – I don't want to say they're in because it's right. November 30th. But you want to talk about if they're near the bubble, they're probably getting in.
Well, that's two wins that a lot of teams are not going to have. And they've got – you know, it's a tricky schedule moving forward. They have Indiana State on the road this week. They have Northwestern at home next weekend. They're at Tennessee. They have IU on a neutral floor, and they have to play Belmont at home. I mean, those are some difficult games, and I tip my hat to them for actually scheduling good non-conference opponents. But I don't know if I'd put them in yet, but they've definitely put themselves in a position to be in. And, yeah, I think it's interesting. If you look at this Atlantis tournament, there were a lot of teams that came out of that with either enhanced reputations or at the very least with their reputations no worse than what they were going in. I mean, obviously, I think Oklahoma played above and beyond what we thought that they would.
Yeah. You know, it almost makes you wonder how they blew. I mean, this was a team that was up 18 on Creighton at Creighton in the second half and blew it.
Yeah. That was wow. As an also a member, it's coincidence I'm on so many of these committees. As the viceroy of the Lon Kruger fan club, I'm still upset about the Creighton loss because, and only more so now. I mean, they would have had a tremendous resume if they could have just sealed an 18-point lead at Creighton because they played really well in Atlantis. They were one of the teams I was most impressed by in this whole tournament. I mean, Butler the more so, but man, Oklahoma. I mean, they are. I can't say they're a team I think can win the Big 12, but I could certainly see them finishing top four.
Yeah, I mean, I like them better than Oklahoma State. I like them. I think I like them better than Baylor as well. You know,
I mean, the paper for Baylor is really good this early, but yeah, I like them better than Baylor as well.
Yeah, you know, so I guess their main competition would be Iowa State.
And
West Virginia. And, you know, I mean, West Virginia, they look like – this looks like a classic Bob Huggins team.
Really classic. This looks like a Cincinnati Bob Huggins
team. Yeah, absolutely. So they're going to be definitely worth watching. But, you know, I think Oklahoma, you know, there was no shame in losing to Wisconsin. They played them even for the first half. Granted, Frank Kaminsky was on the bench for most of that first half. And when he came back in, they really didn't have an answer. But, you know, I think Oklahoma looked pretty good. I think – North Carolina rebounded nicely and picked up two nice wins. I think everybody kind of knew UCLA wasn't quite to the level of the teams that they ended up playing against. And, you know, that's going to be a team that's going to be up and down most of the year. I think they'll probably make the tournament, but they're going to be not at the top of their game necessarily. Let's see.
And there's Florida. Again.
Well, and that's okay. So Florida, and this is, you know, we were laughing last week about the possibility of a one bid SEC. Now Arkansas helped themselves out. I think they're well on their way to a bid at this stage. But now Florida has losses against Miami, Georgetown in overtime, and North Carolina. They've also got an overtime win at home versus Louisiana Monroe. Which
is those Warhawks. Let me tell you,
that's not a way to make a living. And then this week they have to go to Kansas where
God.
If they lose that game, now you're talking about a 3-4 Florida Gators team with their best win coming against William and Mary.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what exactly you would say the problem is specifically with this Florida team. Obviously, offensively, they've not gotten the production that they need out of Finney Smith or Eli Carter or Casey Hill. I mean, they've really struggled shooting the ball. They're one of the worst shooting teams in the country right now. Their effective field goal percentage is 44%. Yeah. And that's against, you know, a mixture of good teams and really bad teams.
Yeah.
But it's obviously you go 1-2 with your only win at in Atlantis being against UAB. I mean, UCLA did that too, but I'm more concerned about Florida because I think everybody thought Florida had a higher ceiling.
Well, yeah, in addition to only beating UAB, they beat them. It was a 9-point game. I think with 5 minutes to go, UAB actually had a lead. So you had to sweat out UAB. You had to sweat out Monroe. And you're not doing so well if you're Florida right now.
I mean, it could be worse. Florida lost to North Carolina in the 20s one year, 59-14, right. And another year, 42-6. So, I mean,
well,
you want a bad offense. And the other thing was, I love the post game. Billy Donovan was spinning this as basically they scheduled this tough to really have the team discover themselves because last year he didn't think they scheduled tough enough. And John Horford said, yeah, this is a quote, "We honestly thought we were better than what we are." So
they were 36-3 last year.
Yeah, there was also that. That was where I was going.
I mean, they didn't lose a game till the Final Four. They played Wisconsin last year. They played UConn. They played Florida State. They played Kansas. They played Memphis. What the heck? I don't understand.
Well, the problem is they didn't discover themselves until the Final Four.
They went undefeated in the SEC.
Wow, that's definitely the highest.
I mean, when you don't discover yourself until the Final Four, that's an issue.
I'll tell you this. They're also, after that Kansas game, they're going to discover that Yale's a lot better than they probably think, though. Because Yale is a top 100 team, folks. And if Florida got taken to OT by Louisiana Monroe, Yale can definitely do it. And this is a team that has experience playing Florida.
Yeah.
They played them a couple years ago. Look, I expect Florida to win that game, but, I mean,
I don't know.
That game is close? No.
You know, it's interesting that Florida under Billy Donovan, they've obviously had a really nice stretch the last 5 years. I mean, they were a one seed last year. They had a three seed in there, a two seed in there. But there was a stretch of time after the second national championship where they missed the tournament 2 years in a row and then had a 10 seed in the third year.
Yeah.
So it's not unheard of that his teams kind of, you know, they do these bottoming out cycles. I wonder if maybe we're at a point where a bottoming out cycle is going to go on for this Florida team. It's definitely worth watching.
Well, when you consider the talent that they've lost, they've lost such an incredible talent. It really should happen. The fact that it's not happened yet is almost a testament to them.
Oh, I agree. No, I think
Wednesday night in the Big East, Lehigh also beat DePaul by 12. We'll get back to DePaul later on.
Hold that thought. There's one last Wednesday game I wanted to talk about, David. Arizona 61, San Diego State 59. I don't know if is there a constitutional clause that these two teams have to meet in Hawaii when both are ranked?
Well, if they don't meet in Hawaii, they have to meet in the NCAA tournament.
Right.
So, again, this was a really good game. And I think everybody knows it's a big win for Arizona. They won the tournament. It was against a quality team, but this is a really good San Diego State team. And when you look at their schedule, they're probably going to be favored in every single game, with the exception of maybe at UNLV the rest of the way. This is a team that is going to finish, I think, with three losses or fewer. I really, really like this team. And I know they lost the game, but I think that they showed that they were really good despite a losing effort. You know, they already have a win against BYU. They had a decisive win against Pitt. They beat Utah, albeit barely. This is a team that's going to have an incredible profile, two-seed caliber. And Arizona beat them
at UNLV. Someone is point shaving. UNLV is terrible.
Let me maybe take a little bit of a contrarian perspective. They didn't really beat BYU. They should have lost that game because there was an obvious travel call at the end that wasn't called. There were foul call, was one of the two. Pittsburgh is not really any great shakes. And, yeah, they did play well against Arizona. I'll give them that. But I don't know that they're quite the dominant squad you're talking about. And I don't know about two-seed caliber, resume. At this stage, their best win might end up being at home versus Utah, because the only other games of note, they have to go to Washington, they have to go to Cincinnati. Both of those teams might miss the NCAA tournament. And the Mountain West could...
It's on TV this year. They're not going to miss it.
And the Mountain West could be a one-bid league this year. I mean, Colorado State started off fairly well, but the best team they've beaten so far has been UC Santa Barbara, and I don't think that they're going to the tournament unless they win their conference.
And I agree, and I like Irvine better than them anyway, but that's another story.
So my point is, I, as always, I embrace your enthusiasm for Steve Fisher and his crew. I just don't know that they're going to be in the two seed range simply because I don't see where the wins are going to come from to give them that sort of a resume.
It's going to be a quantity of wins.
Well, okay, so they're volume dealers, is what you're
saying.
Yes,
okay. High in the rankings.
High in the rankings. All right. Let's move forward a little bit.
We don't want to discuss Louisville 45, Cleveland State 33.
No, because I wanted instead to discuss Virginia 45, Rutgers 26. Is that okay?
Oh, God. this game. Oh, Lord. Like,
I missed it. Thank God.
You didn't miss it at all.
I wouldn't say you were missing it.
Yeah. Rutgers in this game, they were up. 19-17 at half, and they scored 8 points in the second half.
You have to understand, Galen, it's not that they scored 8 points in the second half, because to say they scored eight in the second half is giving them an amount of credit that they so richly do not deserve. I had this open. Hold on a sec. Where is it? Because the breakdown of how they scored the 8 points.
Lee loves this game.
was pretty fantastic.
I admire Lee's appreciation.
Lee's gonna put this in his 2014-2015 pantheon of games. We really need to do that. We need to each select a 5-game pantheon for this season.
I believe that Rutgers scored 2 points in the last 8 minutes. I mean,
that's some Savannah State shit.
Like right the there. Fact really. That they I mean, actually. Beat Vanderbilt. Like, by the way, Vanderbilt's out. I'm sorry, Vanderbilt's out.
No,
Vanderbilt's out.
No.
Vanderbilt is out. Okay.
Wait a minute.
They beat Kentucky twice. Travel in a time machine to '98. Beat that Kentucky team twice. Travel to 1958 and beat that Kentucky team twice. And I might put them in the first four. I mean, probably not.
It's interesting because now
it's not easy to beat Lipscomb.
No. This Rutgers team is so horrific.
Yeah.
Getting waxed at home by St. Peter's, they're gonna. I mean, Galen, I do not expect them to win a game in the Big Ten this year.
There's some teams in the Big Ten that are worse than Vanderbilt, I think.
Okay, but not worse than Rutgers. They're really bad.
Well, but I was saying Rutgers beat Vanderbilt, so there you go.
I know, but still, like this was. Look, Tony Bennett really. You couldn't put 50 on Rutgers. Like, I mean, God.
Well, it's interesting because in two teams in the KenPom top five now, Virginia scores 45 against Rutgers and ends up winning by almost 20 points. Louisville scores 45 against Cleveland State and wins by 12 this week. And, you know, this is not the sort of performance offensively you would expect. I mean, these teams are obviously, they're built on defense. They're dominant defensively. But it's just odd that two teams that we would consider to be among the best 5 or 10 in the country are having that much trouble scoring in a particular game. And obviously Louisville has scored at least 80 points in all of their other games, so it's not that big of a deal, but it is kind of a statistical curiosity.
I mean, Virginia's top 40 in offensive efficiency, but I mean, that's heavily weighted towards the efficiency side more than the offensive side. The less said about that game, we've already said too much. I mean, the most notable thing to happen in that frickin' tournament happened in the runner-up game, the LaSalle-Vanderbilt game, where Rick Crawford, the official, after throwing up the jump ball to start the consolation
game. This was just a freak accident. Horrible.
On Saturday, took an elbow in the head, and I mean, it was an empty Barclays Center, so when people say you could hear a pin drop, that's because nobody was fucking there. But because Rutgers really captures the New York market, by the way, there were like 4,000 people at the Rutgers Virginia game.
He's so bitter. It's great.
It's 4,000 of them for Wahoos. Not that I'm, you know, bitter or anything. But no, so in the consolation game, Rick Crawford, the official, throws up the jump ball. He gets an inadvertent elbow in the head and falls down, hits his head on the floor, is clearly, like, out of it. They call the EMTs out. He gets put on a backboard and a neck brace and taken off, and it was just it was a really awful scene, but
yeah,
that was the most notable thing that happened, just a complete freak accident. Yeah. I'm excited to see which nut job coach decides this means we don't need jump balls to start basketball games anymore. My money is on Kevin Stallings. He was there.
Let's jump to another game. A team I'm getting a little bit concerned about, Old Dominion 73, Virginia Commonwealth 67. And this is Virginia Commonwealth's second loss. They lost earlier in the week to Villanova, and they didn't just lose to Villanova. They really got boat raced by the Wildcats. Yeah.
But only for the last 19 minutes or so.
Well, that's saying something, though. I mean, when it's a 2-point deficit at half, and that turns into a 24-point blowout, that's a problem.
Well, all I'm saying is that if it were a 21-minute game and not a 40-minute game, they would have been just fine. You wouldn't have that concern.
I mean, it's not. It's irrelevant. But
I mean, it's,
if it was only a 39-minute, 56-second game, you can't have a hell of a win today on the resume.
Yeah.
I will say this, that what concerns me about VCU isn't so much that loss per se, or the Old Dominion loss, but what they have coming up. Because they have a pretty tough schedule. Like, this is some gutsy scheduling by Shaka, and I appreciate it. But they go to Illinois State.
Which is just a landmine waiting to happen.
Yes, yeah, then,
it is.
Then they're home in consecutive games to Virginia, Northern Iowa, and Belmont, before then traveling to Cincinnati. And then you also throw in a game at home versus Cleveland State at the end of December. I mean, that's you have to be nervous if you're VCU and you're looking at the way you've played so far. You're a little bit shaky. You're losing games to Old Dominion. There's three or four potential losses in that group of games.
Yeah, and a little bit of an oddity about Old Dominion. They only have one loss. They have wins against Richmond and Illinois State. Nothing incredible. LSU. Away from home, down at the Paradise Jam. So nothing incredible, but maybe is this good enough to land them inside the bubble? Maybe, depending on how good VCU does. This is a rivalry game. Old Dominion, the place was jacked for it. And, I mean, really, they came back. I think Old Dominion was up by 20 at one point in the second half. I mean, they just boat raced him, as Gatlin would like to say. But
I mean, I would say, as far as Old Dominion's concerned, the only way it lands them inside the bubble is – actually, there's no way, because they don't have enough on the rest of their schedule. The best team they play remaining on the schedule is Georgia State at home. And you get into their conference play, and they don't get to play Louisiana Tech on the road. So, you know, they would have to basically run the table, I think, in Conference USA and then lose – to Louisiana Tech, assuming they're the second best team in the conference championship, in order to really get strong consideration as an at-large. I just don't think they're going to have the resume material at this stage.
Yeah, they could potentially have a strong RPI, though.
They could.
Because LSU should be decent. Illinois is kind of a toss-up. Gardner-Webb, they'll start winning in the Big South. Georgia State's going to win a lot. William and Mary's going to win a lot. I mean, they might have a really good RPI by the end of the year.
It's worth keeping an eye on, without question.
Right, yeah.
One last game from today, Lee, Kansas 61, Michigan State 56. Wasn't terribly impressed with either of these teams, but I was horrified at Michigan State's inability to do anything with the basketball in the last minute of the game. That's a real red flag for a team that normally thrives in those situations.
Yeah, I mean, you would think Travis Trice at some point in the last 4 years picked up some sort of late game, intelligence, it's concerning. Look, this is a Michigan State team that lost a lot, that is going to need a lot of work, and it's early, and they played, it's interesting because both they and UConn today had losses in games that really, are demoralizing. But at the same time, when you consider the roster set up for both teams, it actually speaks a lot to the quality of the coaching they have that they kept it that close against teams that have clearly superior talent. But yeah, in the last minute, I mean, they had a chance to get a win that they didn't need, but it would have been so huge for this team to get their confidence that, you know, they can really compete on the national level this year. When you consider that, I mean, Duke beat them by 10, but I mean, it felt like more than that.
Right.
And
right.
They were bailed out by the fact that later that night, you know, Kentucky dropped a nuclear bomb on Kansas. But then that Kansas team turns around and goes out and beats them and makes them look really bad in the last minute of the game. I mean, this is a team. I'm long on Michigan State. I mean, I'm not really concerned about this game specifically. I think they're coming along nicely. They haven't really. I mean, remember last year? How bad did they look in the out of conference? I mean, it was just we were pulling our hair out. Like, what's the deal? And in their first game this year, I watched that game at Navy, and they tried to lose that game, and it was like, oh God, here we go again. Like, but you know, ever since then, they've had very impressive wins over bad teams, which is something they didn't really do last year.
Right.
And you look at their upcoming schedule; they have the road game with Notre Dame in the ACC Big Ten Challenge. And then, you know, a very, very soft home stretch, which is it's been said in the media, it's true. This is one of the, probably the softest schedule Tom Izzo's ever played at Michigan State. But, you know, this is a team that's going to generate a lot of confidence going forward in the month of December before they enter Big Ten play. And, you know, it was disconcerting that they struggled so much hanging on to the ball in the last minute, but I chalk that more up to the quality guard play for Kansas more than anything else.
I guess what I'd be concerned with about Michigan State is if you don't win that game against Notre Dame, your best win in the non-conference is a neutral court win against Marquette.
Yeah.
And that could be an issue. I mean, this team looks like it might struggle on the road. And, you know, I don't think they'll be in position where they're not going to make the tournament, but I think seeding wise, they're going to really struggle. And, you know, you look at, I mean, maybe you get some turnarounds on this roster, but, you know, they've got to get better play out of Trice and Dawson, and they've got to get better play out of Denzel Valentine. And then they're relying on a bunch of younger guys from that point forward. And I don't know. I mean, the way the Big Ten looks right now, I would be surprised if this Michigan State team finished higher than fifth.
I'll say this about the way their schedule breaks out. Their first two conference games are at home, and of their two back-to-back road games in conference, one of them features Rutgers. So it breaks pretty favorably for them in terms of the dealing with the road. But, yeah, it's going to be tough for them on the road in conference, but this is also a team where I think they can gel as the season goes on. And even if they're, you know, sixth or seventh in the Big Ten, I think that, you know, it's going to be hard because what are we going to point at for signature stuff? It's going to have to all be in conference, like you said. I mean, the Notre Dame win even in and of itself might not be that impressive.
Yeah, that's true. That's actually a great opportunity for us to transition to talking about the ACC Big Ten Challenge, which comes up this week. I don't know if you guys have had a chance to look at the games, but I'll just go ahead and rattle them off day by day. There's 3 days for the ACC Big Ten Challenge this year. Day one is, I mean, this is tailor-made for David Griggs as Nebraska travels to FSU. Now, the second game is tailor-made for nobody. And it's funny, when you go on the KenPom fan match for that day and you're looking at the various games, this game that I'm about to read off ranks 11th. And it ranks behind such luminary games as Arkansas State, Central Arkansas, Western Carolina,
this
Charleston.
Taylor made
Southern,
for Lee Del Vick. He loves this game.
Utah Valley, Sacramento State has a higher thrill score than this game. I'm talking about Rutgers at Clemson.
Oh God.
Clemson's already lost at home to Winthrop, and they've already lost on a neutral court to Gardner-Webb. They did beat LSU because everybody's doing that these days. And we've already been through the travails that Rutgers has faced so far.
Literally, literally having heart palpitations right now.
But that game, yes. That game happening on Monday, that's the first two games of the ACC Big Ten Challenge. You can tell they kind of tried to bury them.
And perhaps the last two games.
What would you be your expectations on who wins what, Lee, for these first two games? What's your picks?
Clemson's going to win that game by 70 points, and they still suck. Okay. That's what'll happen.
And What about a Nebraska at FSU?
Nebraska at FSU. Well, the interesting thing is going to be how Tim Miles gets Jimbo Fisher on the plane home with him to coach the football team. Or, I mean, I don't know. David probably agrees. I think Tim Miles might just coach the football team in Nebraska next year.
I think if Tim Miles coached the football team, they'd win at least three or four Big Ten titles. I mean, Big Ten, not that strong.
I like Nebraska in this game. I'm not worried about them. People are trying to make a big deal over the fact that they went on the road at URI and lost. URI is a good team, and that was a hell of a game.
Yeah.
And I'm not concerned for Nebraska on that. At least, I mean, Florida State's pretty poor as well. So I expect a split of the first night, but not because the conferences are really even, but because they each have some really exceptionally bad basketball playing for them that night.
David, real quick, your picks on these?
I think Nebraska goes down there and wins. Florida State was a team I was really big on coming into the year, but they've been really disappointing. I think Nebraska goes in there and wins. Nebraska's not as good yet as I thought they would be. You know, went to Rhode Island and lost a game they probably should have won, but I think they get this one. And, yeah, Clemson beats Rutgers, and it looks like a bye game.
Yeah.
And by the way, because we mentioned it, Nebraska, you know, this Florida State game wouldn't be a big win per se, but that's another team where you look at the schedule and their non-conference schedule is really just shameful. And it I don't know what David Griggs is going to say. It's
well,
Miles has embarrassed himself with this. And I mean, they have Creighton at home who, you know, I mean, that's a rivalry game, so to speak. And well, Creighton's been better than we thought.
You can't say that. You need to apologize to Tim Miles. Apologize to Tim Miles right now. You can't say bad things.
When he apologizes for the fact that he actually scheduled Tennessee, Martin, Northern Kentucky, and Central Arkansas, then I'll apologize to him.
Lee, bad things are going to happen. Bad things will happen to you when you say bad things about Tim
Miles. Anyway, moving forward, let me start with David this time. I'll give you the first three games from Tuesday. So we have Pitt at Indiana, which we already discussed a little bit. Well, let's just talk about that game right now, actually. So we know Pitt's got some problems. They're missing a couple of key players. They're missing talent. But, you know, they did have a nice win versus Kansas State, and they face an IU team that has struggled a bit. It's I don't know. I mean, Pitt, their offense has looked fine so far. They even in games that you might not have expected it to. They scored a lot of points against Hawaii. They lost that game because their defense was bad. Both of these teams really don't have very good defenses.
They lost to Hawaii.
One team plays very fast, IU. One team plays very slow in Pitt.
And both teams play really stupid.
And
so
they do struggle sometimes with on-court intelligence. David, who do you expect to win this game?
It's hard to say. I think I'm going to go with Indiana just because they're the home team. But in reality, I mean, I think it's a game between two teams that will really, really struggle to win the NCAA or to make the NCAA tournament. So much so, you wonder if this even goes in the books as a quality win for whoever gets it.
Yeah. Lee?
Well, I, too, think these teams will struggle to win the NCAA tournament. I think Indiana wins this by 7 to 10 points because what I've seen from Indiana in flashes has been very impressive. Yes, defensively they've been a sieve at times, but you know, I still think the talent they have, especially the freshman wings, is going to be something that Pitt isn't prepared to defend against. So I like the Hoosiers at home.
All right, fair enough.
And
quick,
I also like Tom Crean to make this win a case for their number one seed.
Yes. Almost certainly. Real quick, because there's not much to analyze on this, but Minnesota at Wake Forest. Lee?
I mean,
this is the bracket.
Minnesota has to win this game.
Yeah, this is the ACC Big Ten challenge, but the challenge is to the viewer.
It's fair to say that Danny Manning's got a bit of a rebuilding project on the books at Wake Forest. And I do expect Minnesota to win this game. I still think they're, as much as I have questions about them, they're much better than Wake Forest is right now, and I cannot believe this is being put on American television.
David?
I don't think any of these teams are in the conversation at the end of January.
Fair enough.
Basically, this is a, can we guess, I was going to say, guess which games are the ESPNU games, but so far it sounds like all of them are ESPNU games.
Let me give you the other bad one from Tuesday then, David. North Carolina State at Purdue.
Oh.
Oh, nice. The thing about the Big Ten and the ACC is that there's a lot of good teams in that conference, and this game gives us two teams, one from each conference.
Well, you know,
not as positively as I can spin that.
NC State did beat Richmond. They did beat Boise State. Purdue did beat BYU in overtime. They beat Missouri. I mean, there's not much else to recommend this game. So who do you think
wins? NC State hung on for a 2-point win over South Florida.
They did. That's true.
They should have lost it. I really needed them to lose.
Yeah, both these teams need momentum and they need to win this game to get it, I guess. But I don't know. I'm not really expecting much out of either of them.
Who do you pick, though?
NC State.
Oh, okay. Lee.
There's no such thing as momentum in sports, and these two teams are going to prove why. I like NC State to take this game 31-30.
Wow. All right.
In three overtimes.
West Lafayette will never be the same.
Remember when Matt Painter was the hottest coach in the country?
Remember when he bilked Purdue by faking going to Missouri?
God, and Missouri is better off in the long run.
I know, it's crazy. Well, this could be it, unless Purdue figures out a way to turn things around. This might be it for him this year. But okay, Syracuse at Michigan, Lee.
God, I would love to see this game. Well, we saw this game a couple of years ago, to be perfectly honest. Yeah, rematch of the Final Four game that the teams played 2 years ago. The difference is this Syracuse team's got a lot of questions. Jim Boeheim is way ahead of time. Usually he doesn't try and destroy the draft stock of his recently departed players until around the time of the NBA draft. But in the last couple of days, he's decided to completely scuttle Chris McCullough's case and tell everyone that he's not a first-round pick. Note to Jim, he is a first-round pick, and your program is going on probation, okay? This Syracuse team's got a lot of questions right now. I think Michigan's a much more talented team. This game's at Michigan, isn't it?
It is, yes.
Okay, yeah, I like the Wolverines by 10 here. I mean, this Syracuse team's got a lot of offensive questions right now.
The Syracuse team is shooting 19% from three.
Yeah, I mean,
that's hard to do.
They're a very bad offensive team. They played decently on defense in stretches, but they don't generate offense. I mean, Trevor Cooney, like, I don't know which is sadder, the fact that UConn has two scholarships for walk-ons and everyone thinks that's, like, anything other than a terrible sign, or the fact that Trevor Cooney is the main shooting threat for Syracuse.
Yeah.
It's bad both ways. I like Michigan's team a lot more. I like their coaching a lot more right now, and I'm going with the Wolverines.
All right, David?
I like Michigan a lot. I've just been more impressed with them than Syracuse. Not so much right out of the gate. I thought they were kind of sloppy in their first few games, but they've looked really good recently. I think they win this one actually rather decisively.
All right. Let me keep it with you, David. Illinois at Miami.
I really like this Miami team a lot. These are two really good teams. I think they're both kind of undervalued right now, and by the end of the year, they're both going to be better than what a lot of people think they are now, or they're going to look better. I like them both, but at home, I like Miami.
I don't know what's more impressive, Illinois beating Baylor on a neutral floor or Miami beating Florida on the road, given what we've talked about with Florida. But both of those wins are impressive. I like both of these teams. So
I like
Miami in this one. What about you, Lee?
I also like Miami. This is the first game that hasn't, I mean, this is a game where it's a pleasant surprise.
Right.
A pleasant surprise, I should say, in that both these teams have been, you know, better than people thought they would be before the season, especially Miami. I'm really impressed with the job Jim Larrañaga's done with that team. I mean, obviously, I don't know how good Florida is. I mean, they got a lot of questions.
Right.
But, this Miami team's playing very well right now. I like the Hurricanes in this one.
I guess I haven't been giving my picks on these. I did have Nebraska and Clemson and Indiana and Minnesota and Michigan and Miami in all of those. I did pick Purdue, whereas the two of you picked NC State. So we'll see what happens with that.
You know, it's like Bleach or
yeah, it's not a good choice one way or the other, without question. The final game on Tuesday, Ohio State at Louisville. Lee.
I'm going to go with Ohio State in this one.
Really?
Louisville's looked really inconsistent on offense. I mean, Rick Pitino had the early quote of the year when they absolutely throttled Savannah State, a game that should have never been scheduled in the first place. So it was a funny line, but hey, you fucking scheduled the game. When you said, I tried everything. I put in four walk-ons and an Egyptian, I think he said.
Yes, four walk-ons and an Egyptian.
Because they were, I mean, Savannah State didn't score for 15 minutes, and it wasn't just Louisville playing good defense. It was that Savannah State is incompetent. I felt bad watching it. It was really actually an uncomfortable thing to see.
And what, Savannah State took 14 minutes to score?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was bad.
Yeah. And also, that happened as well in San Diego State had a game last week where the same thing happened. I want to say it was against Bakersfield.
Yeah.
And it was just, it gets uncomfortable to watch at that point. Like, it's sad. You know the kids aren't incompetent. But Louisville against, you know, not Savannah State, I don't know if they'll be able to handle the Ohio State defense. And, you know, I'm a fan of Thad Matta and what he's doing with this team right now. And I'm going to go ahead and, I mean, they're top 20 in the country in KenPom and defense. Now, granted, it's against a schedule that is less than impressive. I mean, the best team they've played is Marquette. I mean, they did blow out a scrappy UMass Lowell team. Let me tell you something. The basketball team. Okay, I thought we meant the top five hockey team.
Well, I do think this. It is interesting that, you know, you look at Ohio State. They've got one of the best effective field goal percentages in the country. D'Angelo Russell's been really good right out of the gate, and granted that's against lesser competition, but they've got Shannon Scott. And, you know, Sam Thompson's back, and you know, you've got all these pieces. I don't know. I'm going to pick Louisville in this game just because I think Louisville's got more experience and is a bit better on defense and is already a little bit more battle-tested.
They actually can play a high-tempo game more than people think. Now, as we said, it's not against great – you know, opposition, but they've looked capable of being a team that could run and gun if they wanted to. And I don't think that's something people have come to expect from a Thad Matta team. I'm chalking this up to losing captain grit and tenacity at the point guard position and actually having talented basketball players.
Wow. Okay. David, your pick on this game?
I like Louisville because they're at home. And again, they were, I don't know what the global sports showcase was, but I guess it was one of those technically exempt tournaments that allows Louisville to play a few more out-of-conference games. That's
like the World Vision Classic.
Yeah, so I don't even know who put it together, but they ended up hosting Marshall, Savannah State, Cleveland State, and somebody else that was awful. Jacksonville State. This is Louisville's first real test, and you know, I know they play Indiana, they play Kentucky, of course, they play what appears to be a decent Long Beach State team, but Louisville might really need this one in the sense that there's not really that much in the way of quality out of conference games. Now, you know, if you look at Ohio State, they have North Carolina, but other than that, there's not much. So this is really like, I think that it's the best out of conference opponent, with the exception of Ohio State going to North Carolina and Louisville going to Kentucky, for both of them. And it's a big game for both of them because it might be the only one that either of them gets. So, but I do like Louisville to win this one at home.
All right. Let's move to the final day. Let's get the schlock out of the way first, if you don't mind. Lee, Virginia Tech at Penn State.
I'll tell you something. Buzz Williams has got a bit of a rebuilding project on his hands.
Yeah.
And I think it starts off with a bang here. I'm going with the Fighting Buzzsters.
Wow.
Penn State, just because both teams suck, and when that happens, I tend to almost want to lean towards the road team because incompetence rolls downhill. I don't know. I just made that one up. No, I'm going to go with Virginia Tech. What the hell? This is an awful, awful basketball game that should not be televised.
Yes. I'm going to go with Penn State, and I'm just going to say about this game that I right now, as I speak, even though I don't have any arms, I am putting the parental lock on this game so that I don't even accidentally turn to it.
I would like to just say that Virginia Tech is 4-2, and of their four wins, the highest rated team is Miami, Ohio, who is 274 in KenPom. That's almost breathtaking. That's a Miami, Ohio team that lost the point today to Elon, a school whose mascot is singular.
Oh. You don't get a better podcast. You really don't.
That's great. I'm going to go with Penn State in this game just because I think they're slightly less bad than Virginia Tech, and they're at home. And they took Charlotte the two overtimes, and I guess that should count for something. But they
played 10 extra minutes.
They also continued to drive nails into the coffin of Andy Enfield earlier this past week. So that's always a good thing. But let's see. We've got the next schlock game that I can mention here. There's one. Georgia Tech at Northwestern. David?
Georgia Tech.
Georgia Tech, easily.
They've been mediocre, and Northwestern's been bad. So I'm going with mediocre.
Lee?
Man, has Northwestern been that bad this year?
They have one loss, but, I mean, their wins are atrociously, like...
The stats do not love this Northwestern team. Let's put it that way. Right now, their adjusted offensive efficiency is 98. And they haven't really shot the ball well, and their best win on the season is a 2-point home victory against North Florida.
You know, it's in Florida where, you know, there are good basketball teams also in that state.
They nearly lost to a team with a nickname that 95% of America would not know.
The Ospreys, isn't it?
The Ospreys.
Well, but they wouldn't know what it was.
Oh, like even if I was going to say if one crossed the street in front of them, you'd probably
exactly.
Go, what the fuck? You'd probably first say, what the fuck is that bird, even if you knew it was an osprey. All right, fine. I'll go with Georgia Tech.
Okay.
But it would be very Georgia Tech for them to lose that game.
It would. All right, let's jump back to a game we kind of talked about earlier on, Michigan State at Notre Dame. First off, my picks on these on that one was Georgia Tech as well at Northwestern. Michigan State at Notre Dame. I'm going to go with Notre Dame in this one. Not that I think that Notre Dame is particularly great, but I just think Michigan State looked a bit lost today, and I have a hard time seeing them regroup against this Notre Dame squad. I mean, Notre Dame is they've at least got some veteran performances coming out now from Jerry and Grant and Pat Connaughton, and they've got an interesting mix of youth and experience, and, you know, they beat UMass pretty handily. They barely lost to Providence. They're really... What a basket from being undefeated at this stage. And so I think at this point, I like the Irish at home. David, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm going to pick Notre Dame as well. And I know it was a losing effort, but I was impressed. I think UMass is pretty good, and I think Providence is also kind of undervalued. I think Notre Dame gets them at home.
All right. Lee?
I'll take Michigan State for one thing. UMass actually has been underwhelming so far.
Fair enough.
They went into Harvard and almost won.
Well, I mean, there you go.
Almost
lost to Florida State.
let me cue you up with the next one on the list here. Iowa at North Carolina.
Yeah, I'm taking North Carolina in this. by a lot of points.
No further comments.
I'm also going to say I love Fran McCafferty, but it's going to be a long flight.
Fair enough. All right, David.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with North Carolina by a lot.
I think that makes sense.
I think it's going to be a lot to a little.
Yeah, this could be that one. There's always a result in this thing where it's like, oh, God, this is the one. One conference had one too many good teams, and they just – the extra team just beats the holy fuck out of one of them. There's always like a 45-point game in the Big Ten ACC Challenge every year, and I think this is it.
Yeah, well, you're probably right. I think Iowa – I don't know what to make of this Iowa team, and maybe this is a time to ask this question. Do you think if this Iowa team does not make the tournament, is Fran McCaffrey in trouble?
I would hope not.
I don't think so.
No,
I mean,
no.
I mean, last year was a disappointment. They lost both of the games in New York. They lose this game. Then, you know, all they've really got left in their non-conference schedule is the two rivalry games in state. And right now they're only projected about as about a 10-8 team in conference. I don't know. Everybody was disappointed with the way that season ended up yesterday. And people keep in mind that McCaffrey has been at Iowa now. This is his fifth season. They've been to one tournament, and they were in the play-in at-large game.
Yes. Well, let me put it to you this way. Would you even pose this question if not for the fact that Iowa State's been a really solid program the last 3 years?
Probably not. But then again, I think it is important to keep in mind that Iowa people have I don't want to call it a disproportionate sense of their place in the college basketball world, but that's probably what it is.
That's exactly what I would call it, disproportionate sense of their place in the college basketball world.
I thought that was just a football thing out there.
Well, no, I mean, that they legitimately believe, and I mean, they got spoiled a bit by the raveling Tom Davis era in the late 80s, early 90s, but they really believe that they should be competing for Big Ten titles and, you know, and Sweet 16s every year. And of course, they've never really done that except
when was the last time Iowa made a Sweet 16?
I think it was in Tom Davis's last year.
UConn blew the doors off. It was 1999. UConn beat him in Arizona.
Right.
It was his last game. That was a Sweet 16 game.
Yeah, I think that was it because they didn't make it there under Alford, and they haven't made it there under McCaffrey. So,
yeah.
It's something to keep in mind. You know, and I get the sense, you know, at some point if you're a team that really believes that you should be competing at a higher level, and it happened with Dan Monson to a certain degree. He got a little bit more time, but Minnesota thinks we should be competing at a much higher level than we are. Why aren't we? Maybe we need to start over. 5 years is probably enough.
Well, I mean, I'll say this. When the high point of your program is being referred to with the words George and Raveling and Era, there's problems.
To be fair, he recruited the players, and then Tom Davis took them to, like, the West Regional Final, and then they were ranked number one the following year. But
Raveling get them on sanctions?
No.
Somebody? No?
No, I don't believe so.
Well, I just committed a libel. I apologize to Mr. Raveling and directed to my lawyer.
Anyway, moving forward, three more games in the challenge here. Virginia at Maryland. And this is, unfortunately, we missed out on the chance of a really interesting game here, I think, because Des Wells is out for 4 weeks with a broken arm. So that puts a kink in this. Does anybody see Maryland having a shot in this game?
No.
No, where is the game?
It's in Maryland.
Yeah, I mean, I think the crowd will be really crazy into it. I think they'll hang in the game, but I think Virginia will I can't even say pull away for Virginia. Like, I think they'll push away Maryland.
Okay. and then final game and the one that I'm the most excited about, and I think everybody else falls into this category as well, Duke at Wisconsin. Lee, let me start with your thoughts on this.
Oh, this will be fun. This will be fun. Now, this reminds me of didn't we have this game 2 years ago, I want to say?
I think it was Wisconsin-North Carolina 2 years ago.
I feel like Duke went to Wisconsin at some point in the recent past. It might have been like 2010. I think this game's going to be I'm not going out on a limb here. I'm not thinking I'm reinventing the wheel, but I think this game is going to be an absolute dynamite matchup. Duke, they played today. They struggled more than you'd think with Army, but – you know, they pulled away. I like Wisconsin in this game. I think the way Wisconsin is playing, I mean, they're second in adjusted offense, they're eighth in adjusted defense, and all anyone ever talks about is that they're bottom of the country in tempo. But they run it so well. You can't help but admire it, and you look at what they've done so far. They already have 4 wins against teams that will be, I think, in the discussion for the NCAA tournament, whether, you know, as a conference qualifier or at large team, they've been tested a lot tougher than Duke has so far. If you go on the whole, including the Battle for Atlantis tournament, I expect Wisconsin to win at home. I think it'll be a very tight game, but the Kaminsky, Jahlil matchup, because I will call him Jahlil. I will not call him Okafor. Thank you very much. I think that matchup's going to be absolute dynamite to watch. The Kielby being able to keep Kaminsky on the floor.
Yeah.
But I like Wisconsin to win a game that's probably higher scoring than people might anticipate, because this Wisconsin team can score.
They have yet to score fewer than 62 points, and they're actually averaging, I think, closer to like 73, 74 points. They've done very well.
Wisconsin winning this game like 82-75. Yeah, shock me.
I mean, when they beat Oklahoma on Friday, they did it in a 70-possession game, and that's not something you think of when you think of Wisconsin. But they've shown an ability to do that, and frankly, it's something they didn't do last year very much at all. I mean, they had a couple of games that were relatively fast, and they tended to fare well in those games. But this is not a team that has to play at a really slow tempo.
No.
So, David, any further thoughts on this game?
Not really. I like Wisconsin. I probably like them a little bit. I like them not in a blowout, but decisively. I just think they're really good, and they're at home. And I've been kind of underwhelmed with Duke on the road in the past. We'll see what they do. This is a matchup between two number one potential teams,
yeah,
or number one seed potential teams. It's, great stuff.
Well, Duke, I mean, they didn't play a road game in the non-conference last year, and
no.
Their road record in games last year in the conference, they lost at Notre Dame, they lost at Clemson, they lost at Syracuse, they lost at Wake Forest.
Yeah.
And even the previous year, they didn't play a road game in the non-conference, which...
Right. They're a decent but not great team in true road games.
Yeah, the last true road game they played, the last two true road games they played in the non-conference, 2012, they lost at Temple, and they lost in the ACC Big Ten Challenge to Ohio State, and they got annihilated in that game. They lost.
That was the one I was confusing them with Wisconsin.
Yeah, so... No, I like Wisconsin in this game as well. I think they'll win by 12, 13 points. I think it'll be a comfortable victory.
Yeah, I agree.
It's 12, 13 would be a hell of a statement, but I could see it. Galen, can we talk about the real challenge this week? Can we talk about the...
Well, hold on. Before we do that, I just wanted to give the accounting of what everybody picked.
Okay.
So we actually had both myself and Lee Delvecchio picking a 7-7 draw between the ACC and the Big Ten. And David Griggs picking the ACC to win by an 8-6 count.
That just means they both need to rush to add UConn to make it more decisive.
They could just have UConn play itself.
Yes.
Well, UConn could drop football.
No, that
join the Atlantic 10.
Good, I've never heard that joke. The real challenge is what? Ladies and gentlemen, this season sees the return of the 2014 season of the SEC Big 12 Challenge.
Oh, yeah.
It begins Wednesday night, Galen. Auburn at Texas Tech.
Yes.
Stop.
It resumes Thursday because God knows somehow there are more games after that barn burner.
Well, that there is the one game on Thursday that I'm interested in, the Arkansas at Iowa State game. I'm really kind of curious to see how those two teams play off against one another, because I think they're pretty evenly matched.
Yeah, I'm really impressed with Arkansas this year. I think they're kind of undervalued. I'm glad to see them ranked and, not just as a flash in the pan. I think this Arkansas team, look, they're the hero the SEC needs right now, but doesn't know it yet. Like, they
too restrained. I can't. How do Missouri and Kansas not play in the Big 12 ACC Challenge? How does that happen? How do they not match those two up?
Well, I'll say this.
What's the problem?
I mean, the games that they're playing are pretty decent in place of that. But before we get to them, on Thursday night, Baylor at Vanderbilt.
Yes.
LSU at West Virginia in the meeting of two teams that were sexy preseason sleeper picks. And West Virginia's played well, and LSU has just been disappointing. Like, I mean, they're not that good.
No.
And, of course, the huge TCU at Ole Miss game.
You're awful. You really are.
This is not a football contest, sadly.
No.
Friday, December 5th, what would be a good trio of games, unless you're David Griggs, in which case it just makes you upset.
It does.
We've got Missouri at Oklahoma.
Which makes no sense. Florida
at Kansas, which we discussed earlier. And maybe the biggest game of the week in terms of power top 10 stardom and future NBA players, Texas at Kentucky.
Yes.
Where do you guys, what are your guys' thoughts on Texas, Kentucky? Unless David wants to break down Missouri, Oklahoma, without mentioning Kansas.
Well, I mean, they should be playing Kansas, but they're not. Well, the thing about Missouri and Oklahoma is that one of those teams is good and one of those teams is not good at all. So I'm thinking it's a final score of Oklahoma with a lot and Missouri with a little.
And Kansas with none because they're not playing Missouri. Kalen, your thoughts on this little Texas-Kentucky tilt?
I think it's going to be not as close as people think it will be. I think Kentucky is a superior team. Yes. And there's no real coaching advantage for Texas here. I don't feel like I'm going out on a limb by saying.
You're such a troll. I know exactly what you're doing.
But,
yes, UConn lost today to Texas on a Rick Barnes designed play at the end of the game. I'm going to have to live with that. I'm going to have to live with that hurt and that pain. Alan, as I told you, would it be so much for UConn the year after winning a national championship to play really well? The suffering I have, suffering.
It's a heck of a burden that you have to carry. I have no question about that, sir. I think Texas. I've actually been pretty impressed with Texas. I thought that the win against Iowa was good. The win against Cal was better. I think Cal's a slightly better team at this point than Iowa. And they've got good players. They've got a lot of tall guys, as you were mentioning.
Oh, my God, yes.
But they just they have the look to me of a team that isn't really that good. They beat a bunch of mid-range teams. And this is going to be a top-level talented team that they're going to play. Now, I'm really curious. I think this is going to be an interesting indicator of how they're going to fare in conference play because – you know, Kentucky, like Kansas is kind of Kentucky light.
Very, very light.
Very, but you know, in terms of like of athletic talent, the teams that might give Texas problems are going to be teams like Kansas, like Baylor, like Oklahoma, teams that can really get out and you know, have a lot of athleticism and a lot of skill. So I am curious to see how that process goes along. But, I'm not expecting a huge amount out of this game. I think that Kentucky's probably going to win comfortably. It might be close for a little bit, but I think Kentucky probably wins again by probably 12, 13 points.
I would agree with that. I think Kentucky today, I was really impressed with their win over Providence and that they held the Friars under 40 points in a game that was close for a while and they were just able to pull away and defensively smother them. I mean, LaDante Henton decided that he just didn't want the basketball to be in the hands of his teammates and would rather Kentucky have it. And I think that really harmed Providence's chances of winning the basketball game, if I'm honest, in my breakdown. And
that's quite an assessment.
But this is a Kentucky team that's been just impressive all year, so I also like Kentucky by 10+. David, where do you come down on this one?
Kentucky by a ton. I mean, it was a decent win for Texas today. I think Texas is good. I don't think they're top 10 good, and I do think Kentucky is easily the best team in the country. I think Kentucky pounds them.
Now, you're probably thinking, well, I mean, the SEC Big 12 Challenge doesn't have a lot. But at least they cap it off with a really dynamite top 10 matchup and a couple other games with some good teams.
I just love how you've grabbed the steering wheel of this podcast. Yeah. Well, that's outstanding. Well,
you wouldn't dare drive a car this recklessly. Saturday, December 6th brings us, tragically, the final two games of the 2014 SEC Big 12 Challenge. Kansas State at Tennessee. Galen, your thoughts?
I mean, I think I'm going to be brushing the dog outside during that time period.
And Oklahoma State at South Carolina. David, your thoughts?
Angry
Frank's
Frank.
Frank is going to be angry if Frank they lose that one.
Frank will be even angrier to losing to Travis Ford.
Yeah.
It would have been nice. That is a good point. It would have been nice if that game was at Oklahoma State just because then it would have been Frank going to like against a fan base that knows him and just can get right under his skin.
Yeah.
But no, instead it'll be in the empty Colonial Life Arena and no one will care.
Right, which is, it's just such a shame. Angry.
This is exactly how basketball is in the SEC anyway.
Yeah.
Couple other games we need to get to real quick before.
I need to add up who you each had.
Come on.
I had Squalor and Death over the Big 12. 7-3. What is that?
I think Pestilence beats the SEC handily.
Yes, so. And David had Famine 6-4 over Big 12.
Yes. A couple other games worth noting. We already mentioned Virginia VCU. That's coming up on Saturday. Gonzaga at Arizona.
Great one.
That's going to be an excellent game. Looking forward to that. St. John's at Syracuse. Sneaky game there for the Orange.
Yeah.
And maybe a chance for the Red Storm to prove themselves on the road.
Yeah, and can I say that I like that Syracuse, I know that they can't play them all regularly, but they are playing St. John's. They've played Villanova. I believe the series with Georgetown is resuming. It's good that they appreciate their old conference rivals, even though realignment chopped it up. Unlike, you know, a typical SEC team and a Big 12 team, that even despite a Big 12 SEC challenge, Texas is not playing Texas A&M. Ooh, you didn't see that one coming, did you? Didn't see that one coming.
The last game I wanted to mention.
To say that Syracuse appreciates their former Big East teams, I've never heard anything so insulting in my entire life. And the fact that you would just use that.
The former Big East teams that are still in the Big East.
Yeah, they're still in the Big East.
You fucker. I mean,
I mean, you go and just up and leave the conference.
I mean, sir, I feel like this is a Southern thing where I need to, like, we need to do pistols at dawn.
Aren't they both in the Orlando next year?
They're both in Atlantis next year.
Or Atlantis, yeah.
It's going to be great seeing Jim Boeheim beg for them to be put in opposite brackets for no good reason.
Last game I wanted to announce from Saturday. This one should be fun. Green Bay travels to Miami, which sounds like a great NFL matchup. But it's also a great college basketball matchup. So,
if Green Bay wants inside the bubble, they need a big win, and this is a chance for them to get it. They don't have many more. I think they got Georgia State twice, but that's not a solid inside the bubble kind of game. It's not easy when you're not in a major conference, but you need to schedule hard and you need to win them. So,
I just need them to be competitive in this game because I expect them to win their conference tournament, which means they'll lose in the first round. But I still like Miami there. It's kind of almost bad luck for Green Bay how good Miami's looked. They probably scheduled this game thinking, all right, Miami's definitely a winnable game, and that's a game where it'll pay off dividends as the seasons go on. And you know that their coaching staff had to be watching the game against Florida going, oh, shit. Like, why didn't we just schedule Florida State? I mean,
It's incredible. Anyway, that'll wrap it up for today. Thanks for listening, folks. For Lee Delvecchio and for David Griggs and Galen Clavio, this has been the Bracket Racket on Hoops HD. We'll catch you folks on the flip side. So long, everybody.